It's Monday, March 20th, and a former U.S. president thinks he's about to be arrested. We start here. As a Manhattan investigation wraps up, Donald Trump predicts his own indictment.
That he was going to be arrested on Tuesday. He was very specific.
Authorities aren't confirming, but they are worried his calls for protest could result in chaos. There is a warrant out for Vladimir Putin.
Vladimir Putin specifically is accused of facilitating the deportation of Ukrainian children from that city into Russia.
He responded by visiting the country he's invaded. And how high would your retirement age have to go before you took to the streets?
He just doesn't listen. He's up there listening to the financial market.
A new song in France, Will You Oppress Me? Will You Arrest Me? When I'm 64. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. It was 1789 when George Washington became the first president of the United States. In the 233 years since that, not a single U.S. president, current or former, has been charged in a criminal court. Think about that. Not state courts, not federal courts. Like, it hasn't happened. And yet, for months, several different investigations into former President Donald Trump had been escalating.
Former President Trump's handling of classified documents.
The subpoena specifically related to January 6th.
It is recommending criminal indictments be filed.
Some for conduct around the 2020 election, some over classified documents, one over a payment to a porn star.
Porn star Stormy Daniels, who got a $130,000 hush money payment from Trump in 2016, met with Manhattan prosecutors.
Which ordinarily you might think those don't all sound equally important. But when the payment is allegedly made to help win an election, and it's illegal to make campaign expenditures without telling anyone, it's possible this could lead to the first indictment of a U.S. president. This weekend, former President Trump issued a call to his supporters on his social media site, predicting that he's about to be arrested by Manhattan prosecutors. Let's go to ABC senior investigative reporter Aaron Katursky. Aaron, can you walk me through how this unfolded? Because it's not like the Manhattan DA came out with some announcement, right? This was just Donald Trump himself.
Yeah, not at all, Brad. In fact, the Manhattan district attorney has been very quiet and said he would only speak through court papers about the possibility of criminal charges for former President Trump over the hush payment to Stormy Daniels. But it was Saturday morning, and we're not sure why, but former President Trump on social media posted that he was going to be arrested on Tuesday. He was very specific, and he called for protests. A spokesman for him, a couple of hours later, sent word that, well, the former president didn't have any specific knowledge of when he might be indicted, but was more generally denouncing the whole possibility of a criminal prosecution. Then, on Saturday evening, the entire Manhattan District Attorney's office, all 1,600 employees, got a message from the DA himself, Alvin Bragg, saying that he would not tolerate any attempt to intimidate the office or threaten any kind of violence in New York, because to many, calling his supporters to protest had echoes of another episode for which he's under criminal investigation, January 6th.
Hmm. And Aaron, just so we're clear, though, from what you've reported, is this true? I mean, is there a plan to indict or arrest the former president?
The Manhattan DA's office has not said either way whether they're going to move forward with a criminal indictment of Trump. But we do know that the grand jury has heard from multiple witnesses, including some key witnesses.
This is not revenge, right? What this is about accountability.
Michael Cohen, who actually wrote the $130,000 check to Stormy Daniels.
He needs to be held accountable for his dirty deeds.
Daniels herself met by video conference with prosecutors. We've seen Kellyanne Conway, Trump's aide, go in. Hope Hicks, his former spokeswoman during the 2016 campaign.
Is the president going to go to the grand jury?
We have no plans on participating in that.
And tellingly, the DA's office also gave Trump himself the opportunity to tell his side of the story to the grand jury. That is required of all potential criminal defendants in New York, but it's not a step that prosecutors typically take unless they are ready to move forward with an indictment.
So you expect an indictment?
I expect justice to prevail. And if that's the case, George, there shouldn't be an indictment. I mean, this case is outrageous, really.
Aaron, what would the charges even be? Like, can you remind us, in the prosecutor's eyes, what would take this beyond, like, a tawdry tabloid scandal to an indictable crime? What is that step?
Yeah, hush payments by themselves, Brad, are not criminal.
Right.
The issue that the Manhattan DA's office has been looking at for a long time, for years, is whether Trump and the Trump Organization falsified business records in logging that $130,000 as a routine legal expense when the company reimbursed Michael Cohen the money. And Cohen, who went to prison over this and eventually testified to Congress over this and has testified before the grand jury over this.
You created a shell company called Essential Consultants LLC. Is that correct?
It's correct.
He has said the true purpose of the hush payment was to protect the 2016 campaign. So the $130,000 amounted to an illegal campaign contribution by Trump himself.
The payments were designed to be paid over the course of 12 months, and it was declared to be a retainer for services that would be provided for the year.
And that's where the focus of the prosecutors has been, not on the payment itself, but how it was booked.
So then, Aaron, I mean, let's say we don't know if it would be this week. We don't know if it would happen at all. But if President Trump, former President Trump, was indicted, what effects would that have? What would that mean for him and the rest of the country, I guess?
Well, it would be incredibly historic. And we've heard other politicians talk about whether it's good or bad for the country, good or bad for him. Former Vice President Pence spoke to ABC News.
As you know, those events transpired before I even joined the national ticket. And so I can't speak to the merits of the case.
Well, the payoff happened just 2 weeks before the election.
But I can't speak to the merits of the case. Yeah. And in America, you're innocent until proven guilty.
Former President Trump has said that if he is indicted, it's not going to change his plan to seek another term in the White House.
We are going to finish what we started. We started something that was America.
So it may not have the effect of kicking him off the campaign trail, but it would certainly make him the first former American president to face criminal charges. And they wouldn't necessarily be the only ones, because Trump is under investigation over his role on January 6th, over his handling of classified material, over efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election in Georgia. And all of those prosecutions at some point will come to a decision as to whether to file charges.
Right. And you actually reported this weekend that the Manhattan DA is now sending out a request for yet another witness they'll meet with today. This one was actually at Trump's behest. So you'd assume this witness will be defending the former president. Aaron Kuchersky, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brad.
Next up on Start here, Vladimir Putin's now a wanted man, so he went to the only country where he's unwanted. We go to Ukraine after the break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Last Friday, the International Criminal Court did something unprecedented.
The International Criminal Court has issued two warrants of arrest in the Ukraine situation.
It issued an arrest warrant for Vladimir Putin
for the alleged war crimes of deportation of children from Ukrainian-occupied territories.
And while this does not mean anyone's about to drop into Moscow and haul Putin away, this is a big deal. Russia is a world power, a permanent member of the UN Security Council, and here's The Hague saying Putin is wanted for alleged war crimes associated with his invasion of Ukraine. And it was against that backdrop this weekend that made it even more shocking when Putin crossed the border and showed up in Ukraine. Of course, this is the part of Ukraine that is now under his country's military control. ABC's foreign correspondent Tom Soufy-Burge is in Ukraine right now, in Kiev, in unoccupied Ukraine. Tom, where was this visit, though, by Putin?
Yeah, well, so Putin turned up this weekend in the city of Mariupol. That's the port city, a Ukrainian city which Russia grabbed right at the beginning of the war. But, I mean, it was under siege by Russian forces for weeks, if not months. Russian artillery effectively decimated the city, killed probably tens of thousands of people. We simply don't know how many Ukrainian civilians died. And here's President Putin pitching up. This is his first visit into Russian-occupied land taken by Russia since the full-scale invasion last February. And on state Russian TV, we're seeing Putin driving around the city of Mariupol, visiting newly built apartments, greeted by a small number of very happy residents. Happy to see him in a carefully choreographed trip. And it's pretty stunning imagery, given that, you know, not long ago, it was Russia basically flattening this city, accused, of course, of widespread war crimes in places like Mariupol.
And so why? What was the purpose of this trip? And did that timing with the ICC warrant play into it?
Well, I think there's two factors why now. I mean, it came pretty much 24 hours, more or less, after Vladimir Putin was indicted by the International Criminal Court. And what's really striking is that this is, I think, Vladimir Putin snubbing international justice, because actually it is Mariupol, one of the key places where Russia and Vladimir Putin specifically is accused of facilitating the deportation of Ukrainian children from that city into Russia.
The Russian military came and took us away. It was really scary.
Information indicating that members of Russia's forces deported hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian civilians, including children. Russia's forces and other Russian officials have committed crimes against humanity.
And in fact, the Russian Children's Commissioner, who was also indicted by the International Criminal Court, spoke to Vladimir Putin on Russian state TV.
Did you adopt a child from Mariupol?
Yes, and it was all thanks to you.
She thanked Vladimir Putin because he signed the decree making this all possible.
And you can imagine what it's like to be the mother of a child from the Donbas. It's challenging, but we love each other.
Well, that's the most important thing.
Yes.
And that is one of the key pieces of evidence against him being used by international judges, and why he is a wanted man in The Hague, even though we all, I think, accept that the chances of Vladimir Putin actually appearing in a court are incredibly remote. This is also a show of power from Vladimir Putin. I mean, pitching up in Russian-occupied Ukraine at a critical moment in the war. Russia is on the offensive in eastern Ukraine. He's turning up, and really it's a show of defiance, effectively, against Ukraine and against its Western allies, and in particular the United States.
What's your reaction to the International Criminal Court issuing an arrest warrant for Vladimir Putin?
Well, I think it's justified. But
important to note that the U.S. also, as well as Russia, doesn't recognize the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court, but President Biden clearly welcoming the move.
But I think it makes a very strong point.
Hey, and Tom, on one hand, then, you've got these charges from the ICC that you mentioned. I would assume that makes you kind of a global pariah. On the other hand, Putin's about to have this huge meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping today and this week. How cut off is he, really, if 40% of the permanent members of the Security Council are hanging out together?
Yeah, well, I mean, this summit is key for Vladimir Putin. I think it's a diplomatic coup. I mean, it's the first time the Chinese president has been to Russia since Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine last February. So it is a big moment for Putin. we're going to have the two most powerful autocrats in the world standing shoulder to shoulder, and they are promising deeper cooperation, a deeper partnership. There are fears. US officials are warning that China might start to arm Russia and provide weapons for the war in Ukraine. You know, China is promising it might try and launch a peace plan for negotiations. That's rejected by the White House over the weekend. You know, the White House clearly saying that this is not the moment for peace negotiations because it will only give Vladimir Putin more time. It will let him buy time, rearm and attack Ukraine at a later date. But Vladimir Putin is not as isolated, I think, as probably a lot of people believe. I mean, not only China. I mean, there are many other big nations that are at least sitting on the fence in this war. You know, nations like India, Brazil. And there are many nations, really, that are still very key allies for Russia. I mean, most of Africa, most of the Middle East. I mean, they are not coming down and condemning the war. At the very least, they are pals of Putin. Most of their actions, I think most of their relationship with Russia now is purely driven on economics and finance and their own national interest.
And also, if you're reliant on China, then that also probably puts you in this neutral territory as well. All right. Tom Sufi Burge, really helpful. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Right now in France, no one knows which place is next to be hit. This weekend, with little warning, protesters burst into a shopping center near Paris, shouting, waving flags. No arrests were made, but further west in Brittany, another shopping center was locked down as even more protesters arrived outside. Other demonstrations have resulted in violence and mass arrests. Some politicians' offices have been vandalized. All of this in response to a plan from Emmanuel Macron's government to raise the age of retirement. ABC's Inez de la Quatara is based in Paris. And Inez, I mean, we've heard about protests and strikes over European social programs before, but like this sounds like they have a different feel to them, right? What's happening there?
Hey, Brad. Yeah, things certainly heating up here. It does feel different this time around. These are protests that have been kind of coming and going since January, but they have really started to pick up in recent weeks. So I was out covering these protests all weekend. On Friday, we saw hundreds of protesters gathering on the Place de la Concorde right in the heart of Paris and setting a massive fire there. And police fired back with water cannons to try and put that out. We did witness clashes between protesters and police officers. And then on Saturday evening as well, another big protest in a different part of Paris, where again, trash cans were set on fire. They're burning trash cans because those burn up really quickly. And there's a massive fire in the middle of the streets and more clashes there as well. So these are images we're seeing time and time again, and we're seeing them not just in Paris, really across France. These are protests that are spreading around the country.
And this all sort of goes back to the age of retirement, right? What is the current age and what does Emmanuel Macron want to do?
Yeah, so this is all about pension reform. So French President Emmanuel Macron is trying to reform pensions. The most controversial kind of aspect of his proposed plan to reform pensions is raising the minimum retirement age from 62 to 64. And, so Macron says he doesn't have a choice, that people are living longer, that the demographics are just changing, and that the government will go into the red should the system stay as is. But on the flip side, demonstrators are saying that there should be other ways to fund pensions. So, for instance, some demonstrators we were speaking with were talking about taxing the rich. That's something we're hearing time and time again. They want Macron to find other ways to fund pensions. And they're also furious with the way Macron is going about it here. So Macron is using a procedure to get his law through that is similar to executive action. He is basically pushing his law through parliament without a vote. And so many protesters say that is anti-democratic. So they're furious with not just the proposed bill, but the way Macron is trying to pass this bill as well.
I was going to say, Inez, because I think a lot of Americans would be like, boo-hoo, like you have to work until you're 64. Like that sounds great to a lot of people here. And yet you've used the word furious a couple times. So this really does sound like it's beyond just an average like policy dispute. It's not academic.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, so I think there's a cultural aspect to this where, you know, a lot of the protesters I was speaking with recognize that they just, you know, it's a big part of French life is these benefits. And they're concerned about that. They're also worried about the fact that, you know, they say if it's 2 years now, it could be another 2 years down the road. And this is just the government asking workers to work more and more and more.
He just wants to open the pensions system to capitalization, and that's really something we don't want here because, I mean, contrary to the U.S., we're kind of a socialist country, I guess, much more than a socialist country, and we are very deep down attached to it.
This also is just more evidence of just how frustrated people are getting to be with the Macron government. He is not the most popular right now. And, you know, certainly the protesters in the streets are furious. But if you look at recent polling, specifically when it comes to pension reform as well, there was a really interesting poll from the Institute of French Public Opinion that said that just 32% of French citizens actually support pension reform.
And he just doesn't listen. He's up there listening to the financial markets. And that's his only point, actually.
And I think it's interesting to note that on Monday, actually, the lawmakers will be holding a vote of no confidence in Macron's government. Mm. That goes to show you, again, just how unpopular he is right now. And then the other thing about this, Brad, is that you can't escape this issue. You can't escape these protests. They're really affecting every part of public life. It's not just the people taking to the streets. We're also seeing a number of workers, thousands of workers across many, many different industries participating in strikes. So thousands of workers going on strikes.
Wow.
It's affecting public transportation. So flights and trains delayed and sanitation. Garbage workers have been on strike for 15 days now.
Wow.
And I mean, the streets of Paris have been transformed. It's mounds and mounds of trash everywhere. As of this weekend, they were reporting over 10,000 tons of trash had been piling up. And then even when they are starting to clean up some areas, because the mayor of Paris has now forced some workers to go back to work to start cleaning up. Even with that, though, we're still seeing mounds of trash everywhere. But then even the trash that's being collected, it's not being burned. And there's issues with the incinerators, and the incinerators are also on strike. So it's piling up in different parts of Paris. So, you really can't escape this right now.
Well, and as like literally foreign as that can seem, I do think that it probably resonates with a lot of Americans that you're seeing this anger both from the left and from the right in France, because at the end of the day, your retirement age also can affect blue collar workers more than white collar workers. Like, it might not matter as much whether a college professor is teaching at 62 or 63, but for a welder or a bus driver, you can imagine that being a big deal after you've been asked to do so much physically throughout your life, being told, hey, just a few more years of that. The resentment there off the charts. Inez de la Quatara in Paris, as always. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, one more quick break. When we come back, March Madness is popping off this year. Both of them. One Last Thing is next.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing, we've seen some incredible moments in March Madness so far. Friday on CBS, we witnessed history as 16-seed Fairleigh Dickinson beat number one Purdue.
Do you believe it? For just the second time ever!
We also saw a huge Princeton win.
There's the big one.
Wait, I'm not talking about the men's team. The NCAA Women's Tournament has been electrifying this year, with several historic comebacks happening within just hours of each other.
And Alabama with the turnover, and Baylor comes back from 18 down!
We've also got number one South Carolina going for a perfect season. It's great television, and it's challenged assumptions about what this product is worth. This weekend's women's tournament featured games on our partner network, ESPN, like usual, but also ABC proper. That is the first time since 1995 you haven't needed a cable subscription to catch parts of the tournament. This follows a turbulent couple of years for the NCAA, in which a series of outrages forced a reckoning on how the women's game is treated.
I got something to show y'all.
In 2021, Oregon's Sedona Prince went viral when she shared video of men's weightlifting facilities, then just a single rack of dumbbells for the women.
If you aren't upset about this problem, then you're a part of it.
And whenever people bring up the discrepancies between men and women's ball, they often point to money, which intuitively makes sense. You bring in more money, you expect to command more power. But that argument skips a pretty important fact, which is, by all measures, the women's game is performing exceptionally well on the business end. Last year's tournament saw huge bumps in viewership. Ad slots for this year sold out early. And some former college athletes have said, if you want to know why the game isn't better equipped, don't blame the money, don't blame the fans, don't even blame the broadcasters. Blame the NCAA itself. After all, it's the NCAA that told women's organizers they couldn't use the brand March Madness. That was only to be used by the men. It's the NCAA that organizes its own hierarchies in which the head of women's basketball reports directly to the head of men's basketball. And it's the NCAA that has left money on the table by undervaluing the women's game.
Dribbling!
So this is a real thing. Women's basketball airs on ESPN as part of a package with lots of other college sports. But men's basketball is considered so valuable that it's a separate thing. Networks bid billions to broadcast. No one's suggesting the women's tournament would fetch that number. But when the NCAA commissioned a report from an outside law firm, that report estimated the women's rights could attract as much as $100 million. The NCAA essentially had given them away in this package that was barely worth 30. Think about all those millions that could have been reinvested into the game. We're often told to watch women's sports to support them, as if the sports themselves are charity cases. But to those in the know, both sets of March Madness brackets are plenty strong, whether you know it or not. And since all my brackets are complete and absolute messes, I can just sit back and watch the games for fun now. I have no money or pride resting on them. All the money and pride is gone. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.